All right, and welcome to episode 5 of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group. And it is an absolute honor to have one of my brothers. I love him, been loving him, his work for the past 4 years in Evanston, and just was announced as NAPSE National Superintendent of the Year. When I heard that he won the award, I started jumping up and down because I was like, yes, I know that guy. I know him really close. So it is absolutely my pleasure to welcome Dr. Devon Horton, proud superintendent of Evanston Public Schools in Evanston, Illinois, one of the leading voices for African male superintendents across the country. Dr. Horton, welcome to Voices for Excellence.
Good morning. Good morning, brother. Thank you, Dr. Connors. It's great to see you and also to have an opportunity to engage in a really, critical conversation with you. So I made the podcast, so I must be doing something right.
Well, I can tell you this. You almost didn't make the podcast because I'm going to tell our attendees today, right? So yes, Dr. Horton and I, we're going to be at NAPSE, right? Dr. Horton is going to be the recipient of the 2022 NAPSE National Superintendent of the Year Award. I'm going to be launching my book, Intentional, Bold, and Unapologetic, A Guide to Transforming Schools in the AC Stage of Education on December 1st. But what really got to me was I asked Dr. Horton to be on my golf team at the annual golfing outing at NAPSE, and he respectfully declined. Declined, everybody.
Doc, if you see me on that golf course, you will understand and be thankful that I declined. You should be out there. I know it's for fun, but you should be. I know you want to win, and I'm not gonna. I would not want to do that to you.
I hear you, good brother. I hear you, but it's just gonna be good to see you in person. But let's get into the interview, man, because I just want to talk to you because Voices for Excellence, the inception of this podcast was to have the voices that have has a track of impact, right? A track of influence and impact within our field. But now this is a time to be able to share strategies, share leadership techniques and methodologies for impact. So Dr. Horton, before we even start, right, I always ask individuals, right, that participate in the show or on the show, what's their equity song that defines them, right? We know, Dr. Horton, you are a big education change agent, but how would constituents, parents, and education stakeholders, but moreover, students, define your leadership signature through one song? What would that be?
I think there's, I would say two. One for myself. I'm a hip hop head and enjoy even music that's fairly new right now. And if I was describing myself, I don't know, DJ Khaled has a song with Lil Wayne, Jay-Z, Rick Ross. And the song is called God Did, and Jay-Z's verse is probably the best way that I would describe myself, right? Come from really humble beginnings and really challenging childhood, like many of us and many of the students that we serve. It was really just different. And knowing what I know now, knowing that those systems were set up intentionally, is not something that our parents did or even our grandparents. This was intentional redlining, intentional marginalization of families. And so that would be my song. But I would say, if parents in the community I currently serve were describing an equity song for me, I would say maybe Eric Clapton, Change the World, right? Because it's so critical that, even prior to the pandemic, that we stop doing business the same and we work to bring about the changes that will even the playing field for all of our students, but most importantly for our families, right? That's the equity song that I would say would probably be selected for parents and community if they were speaking about our equity journey and my equity work.
Absolutely. Dr. Horton, I mean, when you talk about intentional redlining, right, what we see, we're seeing students segmented by zip codes. And then, you know, we see the disparities of achievement, disparities of opportunities and access, right? Intentional marginalization. I call it the new disguised or the facade of separate but equal. And then you said change the world. I got a tattoo on my on my arm that says change the world, because we really do have to stop what we're doing from the Jeffersonian model, even elements, strong elements that still, you know, is undergirded in the systems of the industrial model. So we have to stop what we're doing. Go ahead. I know you want to say something, Dr. Burns.
No, I was saying, like, that's a legitimate. The Jeffersonian model is what, unfortunately, we're still living in that. And it's surprising that we haven't had a collective approach, right, from us as leaders and as educators, to really take a stand and position and say, that's enough. Now, we have pockets of it. We have some people that are doing some really great work and some systems that are doing some really great work, but it's going to take a collective approach to really disrupt that.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole thing around collective impact, right? I mean, when we see these pockets now, we know what the national strategy is. How do we scale those pockets of excellence, even into the communities of resistance? But again, I want to congratulate you personally as a friend, you know, and as a colleague in this work for winning such a prestigious award, the 2022 NAPSE National Superintendent of the Year. A mentor and a fraternity brother of mine, Dr. Greg Spencer, right? He always state that people see the resume. They see your curriculum vitae. They see, you know, Dr. Horton, you know, leading voice as an African-American superintendent across this country, NAPSE superintendent there. They see the resume, but your equity stance, I should make it a little stronger. Your justice leadership signature stance, right, has elicited, Devon, you know, some attacks that are just absolutely egregious on you. I know him personally because we know, okay? But now, as a Black educator, Black male educator, superintendent, how do you keep going despite the known obstacles that you faced and will continue to face because of the work you're doing?
So there's so much to be said about that, right? I've always been in the field going into this work, knowing that this system needed to be disrupted. I've had really good mentorship. Coming up through the ranks, through a gentleman, I cannot be honest and say I didn't appreciate it at the time, but I understand. A guy by the name of Arthur Covey, he's been a superintendent over 20 years. He's now in East St. Louis. And he said something to me that was so critical. And it sounds simple, but it really makes sense. And I've seen so many people flounder by not doing this. He said, Devon, always make decisions with your core values, whatever your core values are. Make sure my core values is equity and action. Make those decisions strong, solid, consistent, unapologetic. And when you make those decisions, sometimes it may even cost you a job or your job, but just know you will be set up to do even greater things. And you know, that resonated with me, because if you're not making decisions as a leader, from a position of core values and what you know is right and what you believe in, and making sure that it aligns with the community, and more importantly, that school board. And I can speak for hours about my school board and how they've really gotten behind me, and they brought me in for this reason. So I can be honest and say that's not always the case, right? To do this work, so there are so many other pitfalls. But in this situation, those core values, I make those decisions. I know that the systems that are operating right now in K-12 world, even in higher ed, we could talk about that for a whole another 2 hours. They are not designed to be the most effective for all students. More specifically, they're not designed for our marginalized students, our Black, Latinx, students with disability, our students from the LGBTQ+ community, and our staff. And so goal one is to disrupt the system. We can spend hours upon hours fighting the Monday morning quarterbacks, right? You know how that goes. I can spend so much time and energy getting into these one-offs with these individuals that have whatever to say or these perspectives. Well, I've learned, I take those things that are not productive and not helping us to elevate the work. Now listen to the other side, because there's some critical aspects that come from that. But I put it at my feet and my team, we elevate up. We can't give it the energy and the time, because that's the goal, is to slow us down in our work, to disrupt our efforts, and to make us, I guess, to be intimidated in some instances for some of the things that they've done to my district and to myself. But we can't stop. Our future, our children, I have children. The children is not mine. It's based off, they're dependent on us to create a better educational system for them. So disrupt the system, build a new one, and then put those pieces in place unapologetically with the resources, and make it more than just Dr. Horton or Devon. Make it systemic, where it's in policy, right? And we could talk about that. I'm sure there's going to probably be some questions about that. How do we make these things stick?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I want to follow up, because you made a point that some people cannot do this, right? And mm-hmm. what you face in Evanston, you are the right person for that job. Mm-hmm. Facing multiple blackface incidents, mm-hmm. facing mail delivered to your house, personal attacks to you, where you had, I'm just reviewing my notes, you actually had to have police escort.
Yes.
So, yes. So, you know, I can say this, Dr. Horton, thank you, right? Because what you said was elevate up through all of those egregious attacks, through all of the insidious inconvenience that you have dealt with, because all you're trying to do is create an equitable environment, equitable learning environment for students by disrupting the systems intentionally.
Can you hear me?
As you're doing that, right? Using a data diagnostic lens to be able to disrupt intentionally and be bold and unapologetic. Okay, but yeah, you know, you had said, Dr. Horton, disrupting the system, right? And one of the things, you know, I was in referencing back to my book, right? It's Daniel Kahneman's work, right? And he talks about system one and system two, where we spend 95% of our time in system one thinking, right? Immediate action, bottlenecks, we kind of stay stalemate. We only spend 5% of high-level thinking for system two. Now, we have to be able to change the percentage, where now we have to do a high level of system two thinking, which is around the work that you're doing. But moving into this next question, because, I mean, you have done this work, right? And, I mean, it's evident, you know, with the disruptive systems and structures that's around for equity. Really now, you know, there's your through your strategic operating plan, we're actually seeing equity threads both vertically and horizontally. But we keep hearing this phrase across the country, right? And I don't want this to become rhetoric. We hear the phrase of closing access and achievement gaps constantly. Access gap, access, opportunity, achievement. All right. But that brings about 1,000 different definitions around that. So it is becoming rhetoric. So, but you have done this work. What does this mean, right, Dr. Horton? What does closing the access and achievement gap mean? And how does it look like in your daily work?
Yeah. So I would say what's really critical is that, you know, every school, district, organization have these strategic plans. We oftentimes have the strategic plans, and these are long-term, these are stagnant documents that say, here's what we would like to accomplish within this time frame. Well, in my experience and what we're doing here in Evanston, we looked at, yes, we have a strategic plan, but we built something called a district improvement plan, and it's the Miracles Framework. And this Miracles Framework is really aligned to say, all right, we're going to have some really detailed plans around motion towards equity. And under motion towards equity, we have parent involvement work that we're doing. An example is leveraging work with Dr. Karen Mapp. We all know if we're talking about equity, you must connect with families, right? Families has to be at the center. That engagement is critical. We're speaking about being sure that anyone that comes to our district understands what they're signing up for, right? Working with our board, they had a policy before I came where anyone who comes in the district must go through beyond diversity training. Well, now we're taking that policy to another level, and we're enhancing it by saying we built these four equity competencies, and every staff member from our custodians all the way through to myself must participate and complete at least one equity competency per year. And that is critical, right? This is the, let's prepare you, right? Let's get you to understand one of two things. A, you understand that we're going to help to develop and cultivate you to begin to think about this equity work. And we're looking for you to lock in and get on board. Or the second is that you will realize this is not a temporary thing. This is our lifestyle. This is our expectation. And some of our educators and staff may leave, or better yet, may not come into the district because they know this is what we stand for. The improved instructional core. We have to be intentional about this work, right? If you say any school district, you walk into school district and you ask, what are those non-negotiables that you're going to be able to expect? Whether you're teaching in the most challenging schools or your most successful schools, what are those non-negotiables around instructional core? So we built these instructional systems. Like when I was in Louisville, Kentucky, I had an amazing team there. We were able to build these instructional systems. And now we're leveraging these throughout my district here in Evanston. And it has become the core for how we operate. And I'm going to work backwards, how we elevate our PLCs, how we elevate our school improvement teams, how we elevate our committees with our union partnerships from the workforce labor management collaborative work, right? And then our district leadership team with our union. I'm in a meeting now, right now. I stepped out with our union leaders and my admin, where we're working on a true blueprint, whether you're in a right to work state or in a union supported state. How do we do this collaboratively? Because it doesn't matter what your state position is. It's about your educators and your teachers from an equity lens must feel respected and honored in how you work together, right? Under the R, relevant, rigorous course of study, there's a big battle around this critical race theory. We know that no one's teaching critical race theory in our K-12 schools, right? But we are teaching a different CRT, culture responsive teaching, right? How are we doing that? We have trainings that's laid out in the culture responsive teaching. We have all-inclusive history curriculum that has been launched in Illinois. We've been fortunate that the state has gotten behind. Attract and retain. I could talk for hours about our teacher residencies. We have three different models now. We have our principal pipeline that we have for minority educators. Our teacher residencies, Create 65, and then our partnership with Bloomberg. We're looking for individuals to be anti-racist educators, whether you're Black, white, Latinx, Asian, whatever. We're training you in partnership with the university. Commitment to accountability. You know, Doc was really crazy sometimes. And I went through it here. We're a public institution, not private. So our data should be public. And it should be segregated and shared what's happening. Overall, collectively, Evanston looks really great. But Dr. Reardon's report from 2017 highlighted that Evanston, we have one of the largest achievement gaps between Black and white students in the entire country. Mm-hmm. So that data has to be present. We talk about our commitment to accountability, right? Then we have learning environments that support student success. What we expect of our teachers around relationships with administration and with parents, we should be replicating the same relationship with our students. So restorative practices, like we came into a situation where restorative was really held for adults and students were still being suspended at a really high rate. So we've shifted that culture. RP is for everyone. And so we've really made some gaps in that. We've adopted some responsive classrooms. We've done some CPI training. Yes, it's good for, it's kind of like the curbside cutout. Yes, it's good for a unique group for special education to help them not harm themselves if they get physical. But the de-escalation tactics that comes along with CPI is good for all students. So we've been training staff in that, right? And it's made an impact. I'm gonna close this up really quickly. Expected targets driven by results. Again, setting these goals, you must be critical because, Doc, you've seen this. If you don't set goals as a school system, then people will measure you and your success by every single thing else. So we set these goals. Here's what we're going to say. Here's what we're moving. Let's measure our expectation by what we say we're going to set these goals in. When you start bringing in things that's not a part of our goals, that's a discussion. That's not a measurement of our impact, right? And then the last one, we know sustainable funding. We had to get creative. Again, we had a school that had a community with about one of those zip codes where 99% of the families that went there were African-American, right? Mm-hmm. And tell me if I'm going too far and too long. The school was shut down in 1967. And they bust all of the Black kids from this one community to North Evanston to make the school so diverse. This is what Evanston really gets its diversity label from. It's a warm community. It's a great community. But again, we didn't do some things right. Brown versus Board of Education, the idea was correct, but the implementation was majorly flawed across the country. So they shut this school down. 55 years later, the community is still fighting for school. So one of my responsibilities was to come in without any money. The board told me, get the school in Fifth Ward and you have no money. Mm-hmm. Found a way from a sustainable funding model to eliminate the operation costs of busing kids, use those dollars to pay for this new school. And now we have a school that's getting ready to be built in a community that's been deprived for 55 years. So when you ask the question, how do you take that work from it being about just closing the achievement gap and closing the access gap? I think more importantly, in my two things that I say, and I've learned this from a couple of brothers that I've been listening to and reading about over the years, it's about closing the empathy gap, the expectation gap. And that's the work that we have been doing here in 65.
I hear you on that. And to our audience and participants out there, I hope that you replay this, right? And I'm thinking on John Hattie's work, Direct Instruction, 0.6 effect size, Dr. Horton, from an asynchronous type of learning, because your answer from that last question, I mean, there were multiple themes that you can pull from that and unwrap, right? I mean, when you think about it, you went over the interrelated systems of how the district, right, the LEA is supporting the schools through the school improvement plans. You have a specific framework that really is capturing the shared model and the practices around equity. Targeted goals, goals that are measurable, because you know that, and you said it, Dr. Horton, right? If you have the goals, they're either going to attack you or they're going to attack the work. And it can't attack the work because you're showing measured growth, measured progress, so they're going to attack you, hence why they're attacking you. But one thing that resonated with me was what you said, if it's not pertaining to the strategy, the goal or the objectives, why focus on it? Exception processing. I used to bring that back to my team. If it's not pertaining to the goals or the objectives or the critical work that's outlined in the activity sets, why are we doing it? So that has immense pushback. But you said something that if people don't understand Evanston's pathology around equity, then they don't belong, right? That's right there saying the vision, right? And you have masterfully, I mean, literally masterfully, your storytelling approach is absolutely amazing. And I think that's why you see that heavy push pull in Evanston, because the way you storytell the why, the way identify this is what we have to do because it's a part of our moral values, as you stated from the outset. But to a new superintendent, right, that's looking at you, Dr. Horton, especially let's hypothetically say our Black and brown male superintendents that we know has a huge target on them. How do you storytell? What strategies would you give to them about storytelling through opposition?
Yeah, I think it's, what we oftentimes, there's a lot of power in like our single stories, right? As professionals, we all have these very unique journeys. And I think what's critical for a new superintendent is for as veterans like ourselves, I can't believe I'm a veteran in the superintendent game, but I feel like I am now. I made this talk.
You're a vet.
Yeah. So Doc,
what's,
I think,
what's the guy's name on Miami? Haseem.
Adonis.
You're Adonis, man.
Still in the league. Yeah. Way past my time. But look, I think what's really critical that we have to do this, treat this sort of like a fraternity. Other Black superintendent male leaders who've done this work, and I think what Harrison Peters is doing is really powerful with the men of color educational leadership structure. We have to be able to bring them in before they get in the seat. And even when they're in the seat, really do true mentorship, right? Yeah. Telling these single stories about our experiences so they can hear that they're not alone and that they're not unique and that you don't have to have this super power and you don't have to be from Princeton or Harvard University to be successful. I think that is critical, like giving them the blueprint. I pride myself, my wife always jokes with me, like, you know, you do this like too serious. I actually coach individuals to the superintendent seat for free. I have an LLC, but it's before protection. But I coach people into this work, and I have three right now. They're young women, Black women. But I think that mentorship and how we elevate and give them this, quote unquote secret sauce that's allowing that, and getting them to understand the dynamics of how they move is going to be solely based on how they're able to elevate and get their school board, which is the community, which is the parents, to get behind them, right? And that is what I would say more than anything, that mentorship, telling our stories, our journeys, letting them hear our failures, letting them know that we have not been perfect. We've had falls, and how we were able to use those failures to get back up and elevate. I think that's where we could really help the Black male superintendent pathway to really get on track. Our sisters are out here doing big things, right? And I'm so proud for them, but I think it's critical for all of us to really be able to lift it and move this work forward. It's going to take a collective lift from all in order for us to move the work.
You know, I mean, looking at this, you know, our brothers and sisters that are in the seat are doing some really, really, really special things, right? And we're seeing that across the country, which is good. Now, you know, we're seeing one thing that I'm really loving is the extensive Black and Brown collaboration. And that's what we need to be able to, A, you know, support the vertical segment, but also to support both segments in an interrelated manner, because we know Generation Z, 48% of our students are going to be Black or Brown. Generation Alpha, 50% Black and Brown, 1/3 of those families are coming from non-traditional homes. So we're going to need more Black and Brown representation. Specifically now, when I say this, because I want to focus just on this pure segment, right, Dr. Horton? Very, very compelling predictive metric, right? And you brought up Dr. Harrison Peters, who's the CEO of MCEL, right? And a former national superintendent. But I heard this startling metric from Dr. Peters, right? And it's based off of various predictive models where I believe the Black male superintendency will be extinct within the next 3 to 5 years. And what I mean by extinct is that our tenure rate right now since the pandemic is only 8 months, and is down from roughly about 2 years, 8 months before the pandemic. So now, as you're seeing this data or hearing this data, right, 8 months for the tenure of a Black superintendent, it's down pretty much 2 years from before the pandemic.
Wow.
Dr. Horton, you have a voice in the education space, right? You have a voice, you have a voice as being one of the lead Black male superintendents across the country. How can you use this platform to be your call of action to prioritize this extinction, possible extinction, and what supports can be put in place right now where you have this platform of advocacy for Black male superintendents?
That's a really deep question. I would say first, again, there are individuals that are sitting in seats right now on cabinet or even principals that are in schools that are doing some phenomenal work, Black male leaders, that may have desires to do this. I think there has to be some more deeper and more intentional partnerships between our university partners and our current sitting superintendents. We have to get out of the business of believing that the only way that we can prepare our leaders is through that traditional model. The traditional model, like in full transparency, it does not prepare many, but specifically our Black male leaders for this true superintendency experience. That's one. The second thing is we have to help our brothers learn how to find the right districts where they can be supported. Because in my journey to this seat, I've applied for districts that I probably shouldn't have applied for because I was trying to get into the seat. And we know that, and it's even research from the CEO ranks, that we have to be so much better, right, better prepared than our counterparts, especially our white male counterparts for the superintendency. And sometimes we sell ourselves short and really just trying to take the first thing that come towards us. So there needs to be a really critical design for, if you're an African-American male aspiring superintendent, that you get in this and under our wings, and then we can help you do a few things. Find the right school district that match your profile. I often tell a lot of educators or aspiring students this: being a Black male leader and Black female leader, but Black male leader specifically, while there are about 15,000 school districts in this country, you can cut that down to about maybe 500 for us.
Yeah.
So that makes it so much more competitive and a lot less easier to find. And so you need the support. And when those openings come, we need to be able to really help them do their legwork and their homework about that community, about how they're voting, how the school board got to its current design, and see if it's a good fit. So I've seen all of that consistently. And I think there's a calling, and MCEL may be the leading organization to help get us there, specifically for those superintendents. And then not only when you get the seat, but while you're in it, to continue the mentorship all the way through. Like, I have the gentleman I spoke about, Mr. Culver. He's still my mentor, and I'm able to call him when I have concerns or questions or just wanted a thought partner, where he still can share like perspective. I wish I had more, right? I have I'm forming some relationships and partnerships with other strong brothers out here, like Mark Bedell, who's now in Maryland, and LaBelle Brown. I'm in this AASA class with him. Like, I'm forming some of these bonds, but I think it's so rare and so small that not everyone has access to that. And now you, right? I think the role you play, and we know how powerful you were in that superintendency, right? So we don't want that to not be lifted. So we got to find ways. So how do we elevate and get access to you, right? In a way so that the Black males can really hear the truth, right? And learn those stories, and so they can elevate their own.
Now, Dr. Horton, I tell you, one thing I love about you is that, and I hope that the audience that are participating reach out to Dr. Horton, right? And what I mean by reach out, ask questions, lean on him, because he has a great mentoring group that he's doing right now in Illinois, branching that out and mentoring other African-American male superintendents across the country. The work of Dr. Peters, you can reach out to him. Mark Bedell, these are individuals, Lavelle Brown, Baron Davis, Marlon Dess, in Middletown, Ohio. These are individuals that, are people that you could reach out to, right? That will be able to guide and give you the ropes. Me, yes. Thank you for that compliment, Dr. Horton. Reach out to me, because if we're hearing that this is going to be a true quandary that we have to be able to address. And if you look at the real statistics, 16,000 districts, really roughly only 500 districts for African-Americans, because you know where we wind up in either large cities or wind up being a quota for a small district. So they could say, check, we hired our African-American superintendent. So now, is how we strengthen the pipeline. We talked about that. But my last question to you, Dr. Horton, before I actually see you in Washington, right? What three words do you want today's audience to leave with regarding excellence and an equity-driven change management strategy, right? What three words should leaders always adhere to on this very difficult, this arduous journey of creating opportunities for all? Only three words.
Passion, mm-hmm. powerful practices, and persistence. Those are not just my words. I've learned those from some readings that I've been doing. But to be honest, you must have the passion for the work. Let's not do this because someone told you you'll be a great superintendent with an equity focus. Do it because this is your passion, right? That's with anything. Develop those powerful practices. Spend your time in the lab, on cabinet, in central office, cultivating, stay a learner of the game so that you can have research-based practices that are critical and also give you the flexibility and the favor. When you want to be a little creative, you can do it and be innovative, and people trust your decision and will buy in. And then the last one, be persistent. If you're not persistent in this work, never take no for an answer. Find a different door. If one is closed and locked, find a different one. I'll tell you, This is the most challenging work that I've done, but I would also say it is the most rewarding by far, because I you can see it from a systems lens, the impact holistically across this whole community in our region. And so I'm excited and thankful to just be blessed and that the board brought me in, right, to lead with those two things.
Yeah, no, Dr. Horton, I tell you, you're doing some great things, but I love it. Passion, power practices, and persistence, right? And you said to keep knocking. And I'm gonna try to keep knocking because I want you to play on my golf team. So I'm passionate about you playing on my golf team down at NAPSE, right? The powerful practices, we can talk about the powerful practices, but I'm gonna be persistent until you say yes, brother, but I'm joking with you. Man, Dr. Horton, thank you very much for being my guest today. This was a real talk, right? And I hope that a lot of people go back, replay this 2 to 3 times, because there's a lot of different, whether it be systems or themes. You talked about the instructional core. You talked about, you know, really developing interrelated systems with regards to equity. So there was a lot of information in that, but I appreciate you. Congratulations again. And I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to partnering with you. I did not get a chance to join the webinar, but it is live. I can go back and view it, right?
Yes.
I got to make sure I check that out. Okay. All right.
Well, thank you for supporting me, Dr. Horton. Everybody, thank you for tuning in. Onward and upward. Have a good day.